You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Never fades the big dog.
Welcome to the Around the NFL Podcast. I'm Dan Hansis, joined in a virtual room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. The big dog is Derrick Henry. It's Derrick Henry's birthday. The Titans fans are ready to celebrate the running back's return. Speaking of Derrick Henry, boys, how are you, by the way?
Doing great. Doing great, Danny.
Great. That's
doing
great to hear.
Doing fair to well. Fair to well.
Greg, we had a little cameo there on the NFL Now program today, and you moved away from the tie, and I'm not saying it had anything to do with me. In fact, me mentioning that you shouldn't wear a tie is only going to make you want to wear a tie more. Mm-hmm. But I like seeing Greg in the Greg jacket and Henley or whatever over Greg in the suit and tie.
It was a button down. I don't mind ties. You have this phrase, and you said it on the show. When you're in the tie, that's when you know they get you.
They got you.
I don't think that way. Getting ya is mental. And I'm fine wearing a tie. I told you, like, I would be fine if we had to wear a uniform, because then you don't have to think about it. It's fine. I don't care about my fashion. That'd be nice.
Greg loves a schoolgirl uniform.
I remember working, my mom worked at a big insurance company, and I worked in the mailroom for a couple summers in college. And I do remember, and this is to not say anything denigrating about people that work cubicle life, because it's a massive part of our country in terms of the workforce, even though things are changing now. It's not 1999 anymore. But I remember thinking, seeing everyone, that I never wanted to be in a tie. I didn't want to be in a cubicle, which took me to like being on the sidelines at high school football games, freezing my butt off after college. Following a sports dream, but it kind of was born out of not wanting to wear a tie every day in a lot of ways.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think Greg knows I've been on anti-tie beat for a while now. And for many of the reasons that you mentioned, and I had jobs for years, like in downtown LA, where you had to wear a tie. And there's definitely, when you were on the East Coast, that was, requisite for plenty of jobs too. For some reason, that didn't quite bug me. But when I think about what a tie is, like, it serves, I don't need it to be functional. Not all fashion needs to be functional. But the concept of a tie at this point, I think we are post ties as even being kind of stylish. Like, they look suppressive
on
so many people.
What is your actual joke?
They look suppressive, and they look like they're keeping people prisoner to some degree. That's how I feel in one. Unless you do the thing where, like, it's after the wedding or something, you've loosened the tie, the shirt is pulled open. I like that look. That look, I think, is a positive one.
Well, yeah, you famously wear a button-down shirt every day of your life, whether you're going to the beach, whether it's like Saturday afternoon. You are a man who's not about being like ultra casual in this climate.
I'm not, but I don't rail against button-down shirts. I've consistently railed against ties as a concept. And I think Dan is correct that, Greg, because we pushed against it, you're pushing against us.
No,
And I kind of think that's noble if you're just like, I'm going to lean into this tie thing.
I've worn,
take it the distance.
I mean, I don't wear it too much, but I like wearing them fine. I got no problems with it. Sometimes it looks better than the shirt without the tie. I don't really like wearing any button up shirts, but once you go there, like maybe, you know, as they say, complete the suit.
Now the pocket square completes the suit. No one ever said the tie does.
Okay. Well, but the tie is part of it. The tie is part of the completion. They're assuming you have the tie.
All right. Just be yourself, man. Whatever makes you feel like you, that's the most important thing. Yes, Derrick Henry, I mentioned it's his birthday. Had he stayed healthy this year, he'd be knocking on the door of an NFL record, I'm sure, for rushing yards in a season. And I did reach out to the L.A. Researchers gang here at NFL Network. They do great work. And I said, you know, this is unprecedented territory. It's week 18. We've never had a week 18 before. Then Greg said, oh, what about 1993 when there were two byes? Nailed it, Greg. Good nug there. But this is a different situation. What records and milestones are in danger now that we have an extra week? So I'm just going to throw out a few. That's how we'll get into the show. It is a football podcast after all. Cooper Kupp is 136 receiving yards away from breaking Calvin Johnson's 2012 record of 1,964 in a season. He's also 171 yards away from creating the 2,000 club. No one's done that before. Kupp also needs 12 catches to break Michael Thomas's record of 149 in 2019. Anybody feel good about that? Is he going to catch any of these marks, you think? Who do they got, the Niners?
Yeah, I think he could get that. But he said Monday or Sunday that, like, it shouldn't count. Like, he's, like, negging himself. He's like, well, it's a 17-game season. It should have an asterisk. It's like, I didn't do it in the same amount of games.
I don't think that's... First of all, it's not up to him whether or not it should count. I get where it's a nice, humble approach. But there were decades where there were 14 games. And prior to that, there were decades where there were 10 or 12. And it's like, well, there's soon going to be 18 games. So are we going to continually cling to the model that is, you know, fading in the background? Like, new records will be broken. And it's just,
bingo.
You just can't really, we can't stop the ship.
The 14
Him winning the triple
season.
Crown is more impressive anyways, I think. Like, the receptions, yards, the touchdowns all in the same season, that's pretty impressive.
The 14-game season, nobody ever says that. It was always 14 and 16 grouped together. Like, O.J. Simpson, who in many other ways is not someone who needs to be brought up on the show, but it should be mentioned that he ran for 2,000 yards in a 14-game season. I believe Joe Namath had the passing record in a 14-game season. Now he's like 7,000th all-time probably in a season, but there was a time where he had the record. Anyway, let's get back on track. Jonathan Taylor needs 266 to get 2,000. He is playing the Jaguars. He had 253 yards last year in week 17, if you guys recall. So you got that. Tom Brady in year 21 needs 488 passing yards to break Peyton Manning's single season record for 5,477 yards. Another stretch, but doable. We know what's going on with TJ Watt right now. He had four sacks against the Browns. We're going to get to Monday Night Football in just a couple minutes. The four sacks move him to 21.5, which is one behind Michael Strahan's record of 22.5. He is now the first player to reach 20 sacks in a season since Aaron Donald had 20.5 in 2018. But remember, if you listen to this pod in the summertime, we had the great Al Bubba Baker on at a local McDonald's. And he had 23 sacks for the 1978 Lions. Pro Football Reference recognizes that as a record. Sacks didn't become a statistic till 82. Trayvon Diggs has 11 picks. The Super Bowl era record is 13 by Lester Hayes in 1980s. Jamar Chase needs 45 yards to set the rookie receiving record. Bill Grohman had 1473 in 1960. Kyle Pitts needs 59 yards to set the rookie tight end receiving record. Currently 1076 by Ditka in 71. And finally, Mika Parsons needs two sacks to set the rookie sack record. The rookie record is 14.5 in 1999 by... You guys got this one. I know it.
Let's see.
1999, rookie pass rusher, blew up the world, went to a Super Bowl. Steve McNair was his
Super
teammate.
Bowl with the Titans?
Javon Kearse.
Javon Kearse, Titans. I was struggling to get this name, yeah.
That's all right. So there you go. That's just setting the table for numbers and data. I like stats. Not good at math, but I've always loved statistics.
Jalen Waddle's trying to break a receptions record, I believe, too.
He is three away from Bolden's record of 101 set in 2003.
The Watt one, I think it is time for that to happen. By the way, he missed games. I think he played in 14, so there'd be like an asterisk on top of the asterisk there. But like, we need to get the Strahan thing out of our world.
That's the big
one. A talking point.
They almost weren't, you know, that was a big deal on the Monday night game. I know we'll get to that. But I hope they make a big deal about it. That's the one of all of these that, to me, is the spiciest.
And yes, I think the asterisks actually cancel each other out. Mark,
that's what, because, I mean. It would be like, right, you can't asterisk this because we have an asterisk to show you that one doesn't matter.
Gotcha. This is if he indeed plays and doesn't get COVIDed or anything out of the situation in week 18, it will be his 16th game of the season, which matches what Strahan, hypothetically, I believe, played that year as well. So. Or maybe his 15th game, right?
Plus, Strahan has the ultimate asterisk. It's funny because people do remember this stuff. I mean, it's like him getting it in such a shameful manner, I think, over the years has somehow made his accomplishment like lesser, because, you know, he had an amazing season. Even if he didn't get that sack that way, like, it was an incredible season. And yet he's kind of pooped on all the time because of the way he got it.
And even if I played even the slightest role in helping to denigrate that record,
you have.
Oh,
it's something
you
I'm
have.
Proud of.
You're leading
you
the
played,
charge.
I would, slight role would be, you know, I think you had a co-starring role or sort of a special guest appearance, one of these two.
All right, we're going to, by the way, with the new year, the calendar flipping over, so much uncertainty in the world right now, we're going to keep it positive and optimistic and talk about what we're looking forward to now that we're in the year 2022. But before that, let's close the door on week 17, Monday Night Football.
Third and three, Najee gets the call, cuts it back through the hole. He's on his way. He's at the 25-20, 15-10. Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. Go, baby. How about Najee Harris? Wow.
Wow, Najee Harris. Bill Hillgrove with the call for WVE. Yes, that was the cherry on top for the Steelers, who had a very underwhelming game offensively with Ben Roethlisberger throwing 46 passes with very little success. But it didn't matter because the Pittsburgh defense went nuts on the fading Browns and Baker Mayfield, picking up 9 sacks in a 26-14 win over their division rivals. That's a season sweep for the Steelers after Cleveland knocked Pittsburgh out of the playoffs in embarrassing fashion last January. And Greg, we'll start with you on this. At the Steelers, clearly Tomlin wanted to make this game special. Pittsburgh's still in the playoff hunt. They need to win next week, and they need a loss by the Colts to Jacksonville. But I think Tomlin, front and center, was like, I want this special for Ben. We wanted him to have a big game. They let him throw all day or all night. And it's just like it wasn't happening, which just underlines why they need to kind of move on. And I think everyone's on the same page, including Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, they try to make it into this like feel good, saying goodbye to a legend. And it is that for Pittsburgh, but it's not for the rest of the country. There is no, you know, great quarterback, I think, over the last 20 years that's less beloved than Ben Roethlisberger. It's not just in the AFC North. I think he's been an underrated player for much of his career. I don't think people understood that he was a legit top five guy for a long stretch when they weren't winning Super Bowls, I think was when he played his very best Super Bowl. But by now, he's an example of hanging out a year too long and not being very fun to watch. And they're trying to have a Kobe's last game type of feel to this. Kobe puts up 50 shots in his last game, except Kobe was awesome. Ben Roethlisberger drops back to pass 48 times, and they end up with 109 net passing yards. No one in the history of the NFL has ever had fewer yards passing, throwing the ball 45 times, than Ben Roethlisberger. And that, yet he gets to put the lipstick on the pig at the end and say, well, it hasn't been pretty for me for much of my career, but we got the win, and that's what my career has been about. It's like, no, Ben Roethlisberger, as a passer and as an offense, has been pretty. I know they won some like defensive games and everything, but this is a different Steelers team. It's a bad offense. It was it was a tough watch for everyone, I think. Right? Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. I know Steelers fans like enjoyed that they won, and it was cool. It was definitely like a great moment, but it was also like one of the worst games, if not the worst statistical game of his entire career.
Yeah, but I think from the macro, like that the no one expected the Steelers to explode offensively suddenly in a vacuum last night. I mean, they did what they needed to do. They got just enough to win the game, and it's more a ceremonial moment. I am with you that I think that it's hard to find a quarterback that is as celebrated in one's hometown and has had such a storied Hall of Fame career, inarguably, who doesn't move the needle in terms of like any sort of emotional happiness in most other cities. I think maybe even it's the Browns fan or the Bengals or Ravens fan who feels a little bit more about the event because of what Big Ben has meant in Cleveland's life, for instance. Like, they should have drafted him, and they've paid the price for, you know, 16, 17 years since for not having done that. It's kind of like watching, from a Browns fan angle, watching John Elway go out, or watching, you know, someone that just terrorized you. And at the end, you kind of, I'm not saying respect, but you kind of just say, I kind of just got to take my hat off to the way this team is run, because it's so counter to what most other teams are doing, especially my own.
Yeah, I would say, like, my general thought is like, well, if you weren't really taken aback by the drama around the end of the game, well, that's, who cares? It's not for you. That was for the Steelers and their fan base and Big Ben and all the people that have cared about that team for the past 20 years. And I think there should be a good amount of respect, for, you know, take out the off the field stuff, just as a player, what he's been able to do. He's going to go an entire season without a losing season. He, you know, the fact that they have multiple Super Bowl rings, they're always in the mix. And at the same time, like you mentioned Kobe, because I agree, I think Tomlin was trying to give him his Kobe moment against the Jazz. And I remember watching that Kobe game, and he scored 60 points on a butt ton of shots.
50.
To get to 60, 50 shots to get 60 points. But he hit a lot of big shots in the game, and he was doing on muscle memory with his jump shot. Ben doesn't have that. There's no muscle memory anymore for Ben Roethlisberger. He's just shot, period. So to turn into the game, I thought it was notable that on a day where Big Ben averaged 2.7 yards per attempt, which is unheard of, 2.7. It's like half of the Gabbert zone. It was Najee Harris who's really been grinding out a good rookie season on a not very good offense. And it was, again, T.J. Watt with the four sacks and completely obliterating the Cleveland offensive line and Baker Mayfield for the nine sacks. And it was just a domination of Cleveland. Mark, I'm curious where you come down on the Browns here, because they certainly seem a little flat to me. I guess that's to be understood. They were eliminated from the playoffs the day before, but you kind of hope that they were going to come with a little more fight in this game. And then there's the familiar question now of what is Kevin Stefanski doing with his best player in offense, Nick Chubb, who had five carries in the first half, 12 overall against the 30th ranked defense in the league in terms of DVOA against the run.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they mentioned that Nick Chubb was not healthy after the half, but I mean, that charts back to the Packers game, the way he was poorly handled. And, you know, from a macro angle, you mentioned a year ago at this time where it looked like Cleveland might be the next big thing in the AFC. And it was like, the coach is a genius. The front office have no issues to deal with. And when they do, they know how to handle them. You've got a quarterback that looks like he's in the right system and streaking down the, you know, the tail end of the season. And suddenly, let's go test ourselves against the Chiefs and see how you are against the highest possible power in the AFC. And it was like, to me, it was house money. You just had a chance to go find out how that went and went into the offseason with so much hope. But a lot of it had to do with vanquishing the Steelers and the optics around Big Ben sitting with the Pouncey brother, shedding tears and thinking, we might have just broken this team after all these ill events. And then a year later, you've got the Ravens still being the Ravens. The Steelers, I understand there's a lot of question marks going into this offseason, but you just trust them. And they basically just embarrassed a Browns team that now has to look in its own state at Cincinnati and say, wait a minute, maybe the next Chiefs are not the Browns, but the Bengals. And maybe they're going to be hanging around for the next 16 years. So I thought the microcosm of like where you were a year ago to how disorganized they were last night. And you talk about not protecting your right tackle, James Hudson, was a rookie against TJ Watt. I feel like how many times did you watch like James Hudson lifting Baker Mayfield off the grass by the back of his shoulder pads? It was a horrible sight. They don't adjust. Their offense has been a dead heap for 2 months. And I think everything that was positive a year ago, you look at the Browns right now and say, it is raging question marks. It starts at quarterback and extends outward.
I think you can, and we'll talk about the Browns a lot in terms of the offseason. I think they'll feel pretty good about their offensive line, their defensive talent, and their coaching staff, and they'll want to upgrade at quarterback. I think that's the direction they're going. But I think that game almost felt like an evaluation. I mean, I don't think Stefanski's like knowingly like trying to put Baker in a bad spot, but he told Peyton Manning, if they're in base, and that's what the Patriots did, they kept all their heavy personnel on the field, which is what a lot of teams since that Patriots game has done, and they're going to just man up, and this was the highest percentage of man coverage Pittsburgh Steelers have ever played against Mike Tomlin, and these aren't great cornerbacks there in Pittsburgh for the most part. We are going to try to, we're going to throw them out of it. And Peyton Manning was being like, I know that sounds good, but it's not a good plan, obviously. Like, that's what you do if you have a competent passing attack, but you don't. And they tried to throw him out of it, and it was basically the Steelers saying, we don't respect Baker Mayfield and your passing attack and your receivers. I think the receivers are part of it. Those aren't guys who are ultra dynamic beating people. We don't trust them, and try to beat us that way. And they did, and for... many times this year, Baker in the passing game struggled, and it's the same stuff. Like, a lot of those sacks were on Baker. He holds the ball forever. He does not make quick decisions. He doesn't see the field. And these are problems that are going back like a while, and they didn't have a solution for that. And the way that he said that he's going to talk to his agent and family about whether he plays in week 18, I thought,
well, and he's out. He's not
very telling. Yeah. I know he's out now. The Browns have officially ruled that. But the way he said agent and family, it just felt like it's the end. He's got a tradable contract, and we probably won't see him in Cleveland again. That's my take.
See, I'm a little torn on that because here's the thing. I think I've said this on the podcast. I thought they should have put Case Keenum in the lineup weeks ago. We kept on hearing over and over again that Baker was compromised physically and wasn't able to play at a high level. Well, then maybe change things up and your season ends differently. And then I think about if he's indeed is injured, as we've been told all year, do you really want to cut bait with him now, knowing what he was when he was healthy last year down the stretch, what he looked like against the Chiefs in week one before the injury in week two? I feel like that's a dangerous roll of the dice. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to bring in Jimmy Garoppolo or something, and then you're going to say, now we're better?
You're going to swing for the fences. It might be Deshaun Watson, which has its own questions, but
right,
it might
so
be Russell
tell me
Wilson.
If that's the right move. I don't think that's the right move. I just don't think it's as cut and dry as, all right, now let's kick Baker out the door. It might turn out that way, but I think there's some risk there as well.
They know him so well now. They know who he is. So
well, they know what this version is. The guy whose arm is in a sling and is beat up all over his body.
But they
yeah.
knew his limitations last year, too. And I think they've had a long enough time that, look, if they believe in him, they'll believe in him. And maybe he doesn't get the contract this year, and they will keep him. But if they've seen enough, whether when he was good and when he was bad, because a lot of the problems he had now, I don't think you can put on the shoulder.
Well, all right. But I think the shoulder is creating issues that we also cannot discern. I mean, I think it impacted his play. To your point, Dan, it's like, fine, you want to move on from Baker Mayfield. I think the way that happens is because I think he's tradable in terms of a package for you send him to Houston in reverse, or you send him to Seattle in reverse in a pie in the sky scenario, that there's an asset there that another team could think they could work with. But it has to be, it's like, if he's gone, it's because they brought in someone that simply he cannot coexist with. If they can't find that person, and it's very possible that Cleveland is not going to get one of these two or three like megastar quarterbacks, then I don't have a problem with keeping him around for another year on that fifth-year option, because the idea of going back to nothing and hoping right. that you find some rookie in the second or third round, or like, God forbid, and this is not, you know, if you try to fill in the void with a Teddy Bridgewater or a Jameis Winston or something like that, I think you're cycling and moving in reverse at that point, because that's just another year-long patch. If anything, let Baker be the one more year-long patch and you come up with other plans.
Yeah, I think you want to gamble on Teddy? Do you want to gamble on Winston? You want to gamble on a Tua? Or do you want to gamble on Baker? Like, I'll take the guy in my building who's given us special moments that I know is a high character guy, even if the play isn't there. That's how I would handle it. But I don't know if there might be more going on here behind the scenes at this point. You never know.
It just, some of the things with some of the stories coming out, the way he said that, but it's a football evaluation. If he had all the football traits that they want, then he'll be there. And I think there's no chance they go down the Teddy type of route, because they'll only get rid of Baker if they have like a replacement. But one of the things I watch when you see him is just like, he's not a quick decision maker. And does he have, and that's fine, like, neither is Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, but does he have special traits to make up for that? I don't think he's shown that. Accuracy might be it, but the stat that always gets me, and this is going back to his rookie year, is he converts pressure into sacks more than any quarterback in football. No one takes more unnecessary sacks than Baker Mayfield, and that hasn't improved. And it's been with three different coaching staffs. Like, they have the fourth or fifth like best pass block win rate this year, and he's taken those sacks. And to me, that's like a processing thing. And this staff has had him for 2 years. So I just think they might be done with him and want a different try.
All right, so back to Pittsburgh. As I said, they have a opportunity to make the playoffs. They are 8-7-1. They have to take care of the fading Ravens in Week 18 and then get a win from the Jaguars over the Colts, who, by the way, and this is a weird stat, and I could save this for the preview show, but since we're mentioning it right now, everyone looks past this Colts-Jaguars game, and rightfully so. The Jags are on another terrible losing streak. They're the worst team in football. But the Colts are a little weird. It's a little bit of a weird team with a quarterback that's not to be trusted. And the Jaguars' home record since 2015, 6-0 against the Colts, 15-35 against everyone else. Just, you know, just a little food for thought. I'm not saying there's going to be an upset of the century, but just throwing it in there.
You dialed up some precision prognostications a week ago. Maybe you know, this is the next version of it. You can't help what comes into your head. You cannot help it when you become a crystal ball man, you know?
They did lose 31-3 earlier this season, the Jaguars, to the Colts, in a game that I've never seen a quarterback play worse than Carson Wentz did in a 31-3 victory. So I don't know if that's a positive for the Jaguars or a negative. I would say it's a negative that you had a good day against Carson Wentz and still lost.
I'd say negative is correct, but
plus they're going 8-1. Mark has the sandwiches on it. He had to be feeling mixed feelings last night because, you know, the Steelers, okay, they got to their 8 wins. Now I could see them losing to the Ravens certainly this week and getting to 8-8-1 for
you. I mean, 8-8-1 was up here. You know, anything to do with the Browns was down here. So I, like, my main goal remains intact here. So.
It is funny that, like, the whole thing was, you know, it was his last home game either way, but it really was like a goodbye and this and that. Like, the playoffs, like, everyone's, it's so disrespectful to the Jaguars. Everyone's just assuming the Steelers like have no chance. Even the Steelers are assuming they like have no chance to make the playoffs, it seems, by the
those
way.
Those who deserve respect, Greg, get respect.
Absolutely.
The Jaguars don't deserve respect.
The last thing on I do want to circle back one last thing on Ben, though. There is something funny about Ben we've talked
why
about.
Why do our podcasts always go so long? I don't know why. Go ahead, Greg.
Greg has had three final points, so here it comes the fourth.
This Ben thing, like, the reason we would make fun of him throughout the course of his career and is like, he always makes it about Ben as much as possible, right? And didn't you even feel like the end of that game, the way it happened, that he's all out there by himself, there's no team, there's no nothing, that it just was it was great, but it also was very Ben Roethlisberger. There was something about it that was like, this is the perfect ending for like where the Ben Roethlisberger career has come. Like, he was out on that field for a solid 25 minutes and no one else was there.
Greg, you feel good about yourself? You had to get that one in there?
I mean, who are we defending here? Like,
we're not defending anyone.
It's just you had to come in with one last shot on the guy. I think
it was not a shot on the guy. Like, you've seen this happen before, though, and those endings did not happen in that same way with other players. Okay. It is very different.
Mike Tomlin called it the most, like, emotionally packed atmosphere he's ever been a part of in a regular season game.
No, Greg's right, Mark.
No doubt. I'm not saying it wasn't emotionally packed. I was saying you can't find the comedy in the end. I mean, like in the ending sequence afterwards, it was a little bit of comp. He went back to the bench that he talked to Maurkice Pouncey, took the pictures there for a while. I don't feel that
you're necessarily coming from the world of comedy with this slashing of Big Ben. But I'm not seen as a likable character. No one's saying, "Wow, this is the guy that we all feel this about in our hearts." It's just like, I kind of get it for the city of Pittsburgh. All right, they had their night. Like, if I can allow them that, why?
So, what were they supposed to do? They're supposed to carry Ben off the field? Like, what left you underwhelmed? Because he did celebrate with his teammates immediately after the game, and then he was surrounded by, no joke, 30 photographers and cameramen. So it kind of created a natural bubble around Ben.
It wasn't so much underwhelmed as the 20 minutes that went on afterwards where he just was literally the only player on the field. ESPN after a while was like, shoot, we got to go to commercial at some point. Like Peyton Manning was joking that like Eli was going to fall asleep if he took another lap around or whatever.
To retreat to the locker room, shower, do his press availability, and then get in his SUV and leave.
Bingo.
But it wasn't for you, Greg. It was not for you. That's why you don't understand it and you're picking at it. It was for them, not you.
I get it. I get that. I think you can find it some humor in it over the years of like, this is a guy who like, you know, immediately after multiple sexual assault allegations, started posting like things about being religious and went to it's like a...
I think, Greg, his entire existence is not for you, because there's so many things about Big Ben that you either, we all rail against certain things that he did, and no one's saying, wow, that's what we're celebrating at all. So like, if you're listening to this, don't come at us with that nonsense.
But Greg nailed the take that Ben is a loathsome individual. And Dan and Mark
that's not what's happening here. He is also famously one of the least liked teammates has ever.
I know, but I'm surprised, Greg, that you suddenly care about teammates liking anyone, because it doesn't seem like that applies to critique of other players that are disliked by teammates.
I don't know.
Is that something that you value highly? I've never really felt that that's something
don't
you value
think
highly.
That, like, everyone has to line up and be like, well, like, TJ Watt was so inspired by playing for Ben that he got his 4 sacks, and they were really trying to, shoehorn this thing that it's all for that. It was, of course, it's like a huge emotional night, but we can be real about it.
Do you have anything else to add, Greg?
No, I think that's good.
All right. With that said, are we taking a break, Ricky? Let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't Nick.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
All right. It is 2022. How about that? How about that? We started this podcast in 2013. How about that?
Another notable factoid. I was
talking to someone who helps me with certain career related prognostications. None of that made sense.
No.
It was just like my agent person. And okay. She said, you guys are coming up on your 10th season. Like, is the NFL blowing that out? I was like, no, I don't think they know that we've been doing it for 10 years. Oh, okay. When's your 1,000th episode? I think it was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on over there? I said, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. Does anybody know?
Well, it's not overly celebrated. Let's start there.
You get that when it's the final show and we're, you know, averaging 2.7 yards per take or whatever, and you can run around the field and make it all about us.
2.7 yards per take. Then. I like that. I hope we're around long enough for 2.7 yards per take. Wait, do you guys want to do this show? Would you guys rather do this show for 20 more years? And the last year and a half to 2 years is 2.7 yards per take, or do it for another 4 years at 6.8 yards per take?
I would take the latter. I'd rather be, you know, as close to pristine as possible for a shorter amount of time than...
I'm going to stretch this thing out.
6.8, like a lot per
take? No, that's not even good.
Small.
That's below average even too.
Wait a minute, Ricky.
I think we're in decline. We're in a gradual decline. I'll take the stretching out, because I mean, either way, this is all, you know, this is all I could do for the rest of my life is, you know, some sort of football thing. So gotta feed the family here.
Yeah, we're in too deep now.
That 20 years feels extensive.
I transposed the numbers, by the way. I meant 8.6 yards per take.
Okay, that would be good. Yeah. I was thinking that too. Much watching better. Last night. It's depressing, but...
You men always getting your numbers wrong.
It is depressing to think of the difference in Steelers-Browns games and moments from a year ago, which... You know, it was a great moment having Chris for one of the last times he was on the show, and we all enjoyed that playoff win together. To this year, it is a steep fall off.
Yeah, no, well, I, you know, Chris was, as everyone knows, you know, the up and down, mostly down love affair he had with the Bengals. I can't stop thinking about how Cincinnati's the most fun team in the league this year, and how I would ask him. Like, legitimately, once every, like, five shows, whether he's ever come back to the Bengals, or is this the time, or maybe if this happens, would you? And he was always steadfast and no. And yet, I wonder if I asked him now. And now, Wes, let's not forget, was a very stubborn man. And maybe even if he wanted to, he wouldn't, just because at that point, he had said for so long that he never would. But I wonder if he would have truly warmed up the idea of supporting the Bengals again in a more of a fan capacity, given everything that's happened over the last couple of months.
I wonder too, because I think a lot of it, if you go back in detail, look at that thick binder of why he was out on the Bengals. I think one reason that he might not budge is it had to do so much with ownership, that he probably trusts ownership to screw all this up at some point. Yet he is someone that would be married, would have a child becoming a football fan. Cincinnati checks so many different boxes about the way that football is played that Wes enjoyed. It does bring you back to something special that maybe, you know, he always talked about evolving and changing. I mean, we just don't know what he would do, but this Bengals team is not like the Andy Dalton team winning 12 games and going to the playoffs, where I think that any real expectations, you'd see what that team really is. This feels entirely different to me.
He already loved watching Joe Burrow play. I think he'd love watching them play ball. I don't know if he'd, you know, admit it, that he's just full-on fan, but he would like this team. There's just no way around
it. Well, and also, to that point, young Link, Wes, in some ways, kind of felt like he also aged out of being a fan. But when it's time to introduce Link to a team, absolutely, you get your son involved.
Yeah.
Because Lakeisha, of course, a Rams fan, a diehard. If Wes was here, maybe he'd be pushing the boy toward the Bengals.
Keisha just posted on Instagram that after this past weekend, she bought Link a Bengals t-shirt.
Mm. There we go. See, she's a great mom.
Yep.
Great mom. All right. We miss Chris. I'll tell you what, this has been a really weird year, obviously. So many crazy things have happened, but I could not stop thinking of the man this weekend. And, you know, I sent it to the text chain of that we're all on. New Year's that happened 5 years ago now, where we all were in different places. And then we all said, all right, let's after midnight, let's all meet at the Cozy. And I remember getting there and Wes was there in a bathrobe at, you know, 12:35 in the morning on New Year's Day, feeling zero pain like everyone else. But when Wes was feeling no pain on a night on the town, Mark, you're kind of similar in this way. But like Wes, I think about it now. Because he's no longer with us, but you saw it in his face. Like, he didn't have to say anything. You just saw it in his face. It was kind of like a half grin. His eyes were a little bit more closed. And he was probably yelling more. But just the look of him, it was just a man that was at peace and having a good time. So,
well, I think Wes and I saw that in each other's faces more than once when we were in, you know, dueling piano players out on the town.
Yeah, I think this time of year, going through the holidays, going into the new year for the first time, without him, and I think the Super Bowl week will be tough. We'll be coming up on the year anniversary. I really felt that game we went to the Chargers, I was in a crappy mood because walking over to that stadium that night, I was like, I really felt him not being there, like us going to a game like that. And we'll feel that in the Super Bowl week, I think.
For sure, like for me, for one sure. little thing, like it's like all it, football does remind me of Wes, but it's mostly like the lack of Wes in everything that we do, and mm-hmm. every season is sort of similar, but it's all these other little moments that happen like weirdly on like Saturday at like 11:15 a.m. as I'm searching through my phone and seeing photos from old or just thinking about his voice or his laugh. So I mean, it's just like there's no real roadmap to feel that this won't be with you forever.
Yep.
Indeed. I needed him backing me up on this Ben thing. No one would have been, you know, he would have been on my side of that one. No,
but see, you're already creating this thing where Greg is in a moralistic, correct room and Dan and Mark must be in the other room. And we're simply calling it a sports event, a moment in sports that, you know,
that's not for you.
I don't want to go back to that. I'm saying Wes disagreed with me about most everything, but that's one where we parked their car.
Also, Wes probably still would have been savaging you over your Antonio Brown fandom and
in New England,
protecting the New England Patriots brand.
Well, that was a tough 2 weeks for us.
All right, let's get to it. What we're looking forward to in 2022. Let's keep it optimistic here. Greg, do you want to get us going?
I do. This is a perfect one for the conversation we were just having. It's this Tom Brady playoff run that I'm looking forward to. I just think Tom Brady with limitations, he's a little bit of a B story right now in terms of the NFL, but is the Tom Brady that I find fascinating. That touchdown drive to beat the Jets is one of the best game-winning touchdown drives of his career. It was an amazing moment because it came against the Jets and people weren't watching that game and people put it on the opponent or whatever, you want an MVP moment? That's an MVP moment. They had the ball. First of all, they had to go 93 yards. Second of all, they had the ball with no timeouts on the 30, 70 yards to go. The ball never goes out of bounds. Three straight plays, and he's turning Cyril Grayson and Breshad Perriman into game winners during this stretch. Like, that's Tom Brady in a nutshell. And I think there's this idea that the Bucs are in such a tough spot without Godwin or Brown, but that's when Brady often does his best work. He's still got that offensive line. He's still got that coaching staff. He's still got that championship DNA, and he's doing it in a different way with like big time plays. He's making more big time throws now than he ever has. He's leading the NFL in big time throws. First time ever PFF's tracked that, you know, his entire career.
What and is that, big time throws again?
It basically just like, their addition, and I kind of chart ones like that, of just like an incredible like plus 2 type of play where it's like you just made an incredible throw that like very few could
make. Is there a yardage component to it, or no. Is it just a difficulty?
No, it's basically like gotcha. An incredible play that you're making on your own. And like,
could you be bowled over by like a 5-yard screen pass where he did it without looking or something?
No, because he has 45 to 50 on the year, and that's like, I like it a little better than touchdown to interception ratio, but like that moment and his like reaction to that moment was, it just got me thinking about like the season starts now for a defending champion type of team like the Bucks, and I'm really looking forward to seeing like what they can do in this repeat.
I'm with you, Greg, and it's like I don't understand it. Like I understand the Godwin injury, that's tough. Antonio Brown being out the door, whatever. I think they won the Super Bowl last year with or without Antonio Brown. And he's a head case, so getting him out of the building could end up being a net positive for them. I moved him up a spot into number 3 in the power rankings this week, and Matt Money Smith pushed back on our show today, saying, how could you do that? They should have been beat by the Jets. Well, they didn't get beat, and it's because of Tom Brady. And it's like the idea that anybody would doubt this team, considering their recent pedigree, they're the defending Super Bowl champions, for Christ's sake, and the fact that Brady is playing, as Greg notes, as well as he ever has. So they have a good coaching staff. They have a really good defense. They still have plenty of skill players on offense. They're going to get more healthy, hopefully. Do not sleep on this team. It doesn't make any sense why you would.
Well, I don't think anyone's sleeping on them. I think for me, if anything, the Bucks were, and we kind of said it in different ways on our Friday television show, that it's like, why are we like struggling to kind of connect with the Bucks as sort of where they are in history and who they are? Because they were so, everything was so perfect. They were drama-free. They kind of went from last year into this year with so much consistency and just kept it going. But now I find them more intriguing because there are players out, because suddenly you've got Brady at the age he's at. I think being discounted a little bit as an MVP because you got Aaron Rodgers sitting out there. Everyone's trying to look around Tom Brady. Maybe we give it to a wide receiver. We give it to Jonathan Taylor. It's like, what Brady's doing is incredible. And if he goes and does it again with a shortened roster on offense, because I do think there's a reason they fell into a hole against the Jets there too, that it is that much more impressive. And for all the people that don't like the Big Ben celebration, this is something that would be, I think, more universally a sports moment that would crescendo into something as memorable as we've seen in the NFL.
I don't know about that. A lot of people don't like Brady, too.
For Tom Brady to win 2 straight Super Bowls with the Bucks, it is.
I think a lot of people
are not a huge Brady guy. I'm excited as a Brady fan to see. Let's say they play the Eagles first round. They get past that. Like whatever that second and possibly third NFC game for Brady, to me in this like repeat mode with Tampa, to me that's just so fascinating. Like him versus the Cowboys, or him versus the Rams, or him versus the Packers. It's just like that is awesome. Like theater.
Back the truck up a minute. We're suggesting that if he were to win a second Super Bowl with the Bucks after everything he did at his age, that's an underwhelming or just an average sports moment?
I guess. I mean, it's a matter of opinion. Like I've already. For me, the Tom Brady story has been written. He's the best quarterback ever. He's won 7 titles or whatever the hell it is at this point. If he wins another one, it doesn't really change. What he did last year to me was the cherry on top. So I kind of rather have fresh storylines and fresh champions and fresh blood at this stage. But also, I didn't grow up a Patriots fan, and I don't, I guess, need more validation that Tom Brady's special.
Would it be different than him throwing 5 interceptions in Green Bay and they go down 45-3 and the whole thing breaks apart in the offseason? I think they would be tangibly different, the 2 end results.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I mean,
I'm trying to talk to like, it's like I'm trying to talk to you into like a bizarre like UFO cult religion to get like excited about Tom Brady too. So I see
a lot of people are excited about Tom Brady, and you don't need me on the bandwagon. So good luck to Tom. I'm sure he needs it. I fear going back down this road because it will just set Greg off with his agenda and his religious crusade. But I do want to talk about the Steelers because watching the game yesterday, man, I'm looking forward to a fresh start for the Steelers, who are a primetime darling. So, they are a part of the national product that the NFL puts out every year. They're always in the mix because they're a well-run organization, so they're always in the playoff mix, so they're not really getting flexed out of the games typically. They get to the playoffs all the time. They might even get to the playoffs this year, although that probably won't happen. But all that primetime love has become a double-edged sword for the rest of us non-Steelers fans who don't see Big Ben as a local hero and are sick of watching boring football involving the Pittsburgh Steelers. And given the core that's in place, they have so many talented players in their prime still, Pittsburgh, it makes all the sense in the world for the Steelers to make a big splash move this offseason. They aren't going to start a rookie next year. They are not going to start Mason Rudolph next year. So the question becomes, who is their Matt Stafford? Who is the guy they're going to target to bring in and get them over the hump and get them back to the playoffs and back to the Super Bowl? I look forward to it because it affects all of us because the Steelers are a national team.
Yeah, they're not like rebuilding. That's not who they are. It's amazing that Tomlin is going to keep that record of never having a losing season. Like, he's clinched that much now. They aren't the type that it's traditionally made big splashes, but I think trades are different. The problem is, as the Browns are going to realize too, is there's just a lot of these teams out there, like Carolina, Washington, New Orleans is going to be incredibly motivated and willing to give up picks. So there's more teams than there are big.
Who are the
names.
Guys? Let's figure this out. Who are the guys that are the Stafford or the Stafford-esque type player? Deshaun Watson, who again is in his own category, but he obviously is a player when you talk about the quarterbacks of 2022. Baker, there's the worst case scenario, Mark. Not that it would ever happen, but somehow Baker goes to Pittsburgh and becomes a star. That's not going to happen. But imagine.
I don't need to see that.
Jimmy G, I think Tua makes sense as a guy that might have some value and could be moved if Miami goes in a different direction. Is there another name?
What about maybe Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan.
I don't love the idea. I'm equating Matt Ryan to Matt
Russell,
Stafford. But
I mean, Russell Wilson's the one that you're not sure how that'll play out, but it sure feels like
that would be the Stafford move. That would be the closest to the Stafford move.
And then I have never bought that Rodgers would be an ex-Packer.
No way.
And now I really don't buy it.
Yeah, I think that's all set.
Anyway,
so keep an eye on that because Pittsburgh's going to make a move, and it won't be a minor wave. They don't usually do stuff like that, but it's going to happen this offseason, I believe. Mark, how about you?
All right. Well, I would mention the Aaron Rodgers thing real quick because I think it would show it would be a service to us all. If Aaron Rodgers actually says what he's going to do, if he does what he says he's going to do, which is to make this decision about whether or not, he's toying potentially with retirement, toying potentially with moving on from the Packers, whatever it is, that he shows the growth to not drag it out for months and months. He said he's going to make a crisp, clean decision. I'll believe it when I see it. But I do think it would help his Q rating, the overall Aaron Rodgers experience to maybe number one, realize that with this wandering eye, where you are right now, front office, coaching, roster, the division you're in and how dominant you've been, maybe you don't go anywhere. And maybe you tell them that and make that clear on February 7th or 8th or 9th, whenever the Super Bowl ends, and just end that drama. But if anything else is going to happen, can we do it in a way that doesn't completely hijack 3 or 4 months of everyone's lives who track this? Because guess what? It wasn't that entertaining the first time around, and it will be more tiresome the second. So here's a chance to just go do it right, whatever it is you're going to do.
I will say I agree that the Rodgers thing was overblown last summer, but it did give those of us in football media a nice meaty bone to chew on during July last year. Like that wasn't the worst. That was good to lead some A blocks for the Around the NFL broadcast on NFL Network. So but I overall see your point, and I agree. Like, let's not drag this thing out. It would take, I think, something crazy happening that is unforeseen for this to lead to a divorce now. Doesn't it feel that way?
Yes.
More so than ever.
Him saying that already, that he's going to make it quick, to me says he's made whatever decision it is. And putting that out there indicates, yeah, that he kind of knows where this is going. He's probably going to ask for a lot of money, but as long as they're willing to do that, What a moment last night, too, when they asked him what it was on his bookshelf.
Oh,
last
that was
night.
Great.
And he says, like, Ayn Rand. It's like,
Atlas
like,
Shrugged.
It's like every dumb guy's idea of what a smart guy would say, or like every 19-year-old guy's answer.
If you're curious about a general synopsis of that book, the book depicts a dystopian United States in which private businesses suffer under increasingly burdensome laws and regulations. That's among the general themes of it, and obviously connect.
I've read Atlas Shrugged and I've read The Fountainhead, and I agree that it is a 19-year-old, maybe more of a 19-year-old's world, but like they are, I do find them to be good books and have nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think it's something that you'd pick up now out of thin air and be inspired by, but when you're of a certain age, The Fountainhead, especially, forget Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead is a good read.
Right.
Just throwing that out there. But
no, I mean, listen, that was a popular take that Atlas Shrugged was a very basic choice by Rodgers. I was more offended by him casually dropping that he had a lot of French poetry as well. And it's like, dude, you don't speak French. What are we doing here? Now, it gets forgotten.
Well, they give you the translation.
We're all having a ton of fun. Is that how it works? French poetry books are just translated
into
English?
Yeah, they typically would have the French on one side and the English translation on the other.
Oh, please.
Why? I'm just telling you something this is how the industry works. I know I'm not supporting his reading habits or really making any statement, but are we dismissing anything that's written not in English as a coursework too?
I think it's a little bit, he's not as easy to peg as people want.
Right.
In the sense
has this reputation as like a smart guy, and like that has been taken off the books.
Don't I agree with you at the core?
I totally disagree with that, Greg. That was the point I was going to make. I think Rodgers is a very intelligent guy. Now, you may not agree with his opinions, and they may even be dangerous considering his public platform and the way he's expressing them. But I think Rodgers is very highly intelligent individual, which is part of what makes him so frustrating, at least to me, because in some ways I think he's likable. But then the more he talks, the more he kind of drives you crazy. I mean, do you think he's a dumb guy?
I mean, I don't think he's... I think he's like... yes, I guess I do.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, not when it comes to football. Not when it comes to... I mean, he's a genius when it comes to football. But yeah, I think so. I think he's pretty easily like misled. And that,
he'd kick
that's
your
a
ass
pretty
in Jeopardy.
Good sign. Well, that's not a sign of like being a smart guy necessarily in my mind either. But as he said, he kicked me... He was all about Celebrity Jeopardy. You know, if he had to play the real thing, he said he'd get waxed.
All right. I like it, Greg.
Greg, do you like anyone?
I mean, these aren't hot takes that A-Rod and Ben Roethlisberger. I was having fun with the choice because she's the, like, to me, it's tough writing to get through. And it's sort of like almost a cliche of if you're a woman and you see that book on a bookshelf, it's like, don't date that guy, you know? That's sort of the image. So it was almost funny that was the one. It's like a big libertarian. It's a big thing. It's sort of like the rest of society doesn't matter. All that matters is yourself, which is, you know, consistent with Aaron Rodgers.
Ayn Rand preached selfishness as a positive concept if you look at it a certain way, where most things tell you if you're good, you're not selfish, you don't think of yourself. And a lot of what she was teaching was that. I'm not walking around reading it right now. I read it when I was 21. And by the way, a lot of girls didn't date me. And it may have been for that reason or a lot of others. I couldn't care less. It's like, I love that we just take things and trash them on whole. But no one's actually, half the people killing this book have never even read two pages of it. That's how things work now.
If he wants to throw it out there, you can have fun with it. I'm sure that's a lousy book. I'm sure he would allow that. He is Mr. Free Thinker.
If anything, my umbrella argument at the beginning was, please wrap it up quickly, Aaron Rodgers. I don't need to hear you all off season. So I basically agree with everything that you're saying, from the fact that I need less, not more, of this guy in the summer months.
You got another one, Greg?
I'm looking forward to Micah Parsons in this playoff run doing things that I haven't seen a defensive player do ever. The fact he was in coverage like 20 times last week, like really defending well, and that when he rushed the passer, he had 9 pressures, and like he is breaking the mold almost more than any defensive player we've ever covered on this show. I feel like I don't think there's been another guy like him, and the fact that he's capping this rookie year on an awesome Cowboys defense. It's going to be in the playoffs. That has a chance to win a Super Bowl. Like, sign me up. I mean, I'm signed up for next year too, because I feel like his ceiling is just outrageous. He feels very one of one in what he can do, that he can almost play three different positions exceptionally well. And the fact that he's on the Cowboys, like, I like it. I'm with you, Dan. You just like it when the Cowboys are this relevant and this good.
It's funny that the famously Jerry Jones, and it was documented on part of some type of documentary, the year they drafted Dak, they wanted, was it Drew Locke? Who was it? It was Paxton Lynch, the year they ended up with Dak Prescott. And in the 2021 draft, they desperately wanted a cornerback. And when the draft didn't shake out the way they hoped it would, they drafted Parsons. So, you know, you give the Cowboys plenty of credit for nailing those two picks that have helped define the franchise and where it is right now. But it just shows how much luck goes into any of these things, really, because you could do a little self-scouting, but sometimes you luck into a beautiful pick or something terrible. That's neither here nor there. Greg, tell somebody else you hate.
What is wrong with you guys? I mean, I'm having fun with Rob. I mean, if you can enjoy that, it just was too much.
We're having fun too, Greg. We're just having fun here. All right, let me throw one more out there. I'm looking forward to the Washington football team having a name again. I know you guys don't like this. This is an unpopular take. The Washington football team on its website on Tuesday announced it will unveil its new name on February 2nd. Team president Jason Wright said that the team will choose the new name, or has chosen a new name that will align with our values, carry forth our rich history, and represent the region. Now, we love Roto World around these parts. Greg built it brick by brick. It's now NBC Sports. The Edge, or Adam Clayton.
We don't talk about their new name. We don't mention it.
Love their blurbs. You guys want to hear a great Roto World blurb about this?
Please.
Please, please.
After that quote, here's the blurb. Citing the franchise's values after years of sordid allegations against owner Daniel Snyder and his cohorts is questionable at best, but the team will try to use the unveiling to reinvent itself and remove the stigma attached to its former name, the collapsing of its embarrassingly dilapidated stadium, and its 30-year tradition of losing. There's no word of potato skins is in the running. Bunsen burner, blowtorch, hit me with it, Ricky. No! Anyway.
You should be happy, Dan. They haven't ruled out keeping WFT as the name, but I think this season, I feel like they needed to have a great season for any chance of it.
I remember that theory. I didn't like that. I always thought what happened, like, look at what we were talking about with Shook on Sunday's show with the Cleveland Indians and baseball becoming the Cleveland Guardians, and that felt like, you know, it was handled in a smooth way where it was like, okay, we're the Indians. Okay, this is problematic in the eyes of people. So what we're going to do now is begin the process of changing the name. In the meantime, we're going to take the Wahoo, Chief Wahoo guy off the uniform. We're going to emphasize the letter C. So we're just going to change some of the branding, but keep the name until it's ready for the transfer. And then we go Indians in 2021 to Guardians in 2022. I've always thought what Washington did here with this 2-year gap was a bit of their own way of silently protesting something they never wanted to do in the first place. So we're going to, it's kind of to draw out what they think is an absurdity that they've had to change the name. So now we've done this for 2 years, and for 2 years, we've all been writing things like the Eagles defeat the football team. I can't believe that's been happening for 2 years. So bring on whatever it is, the Red Wings or the Imperial Destroyers or whatever the Admirals, I think, has been thrown out there as a possibility. Let's bring it back to nickname land so we can move on with our lives, because this whole thing has been ridiculous.
Let's not bring back the Washington Bullets, that failed concept in NBA circles. That doesn't fit anything we're trying to achieve. I do think it matters for me just aesthetically. Like, if it's a name that is super clunky, it's going to be with us for decades. So I am just fingers crossed that it kind of rolls off the tongue as something nice.
Yeah, but no matter what it is, you'll get used to it, and then it just will be that.
Oh, and I have no power over it, so you just just get in line and just do what they say.
They need some new vibes. They have the fewest amount of playoff wins in the NFL since their current ownership took over the team.
Yeah, and there was that report out there. I don't know if you saw that. You know, the barrier fell down and almost crushed Jalen Hurts at FedEx Field. And there was a report that no one from the Washington organization like came to the aid of the people. Now, they refuted that. I want to make sure that's out there, that side of the story. But like, why all these stories are connected to this team? I complain all the time about being a Jets fan. And Mark, you're up in arms about the Browns letting you down all the time. But like, man, we ain't that.
No, they've got problems unique to them. There's no doubt about it.
Let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all. But I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
All right, wrap it up, Mark.
All right, I have a quick two-parter. The first one, a little bit more of a wish casting, but I know everyone, it's like we're told that it's so reprehensible what Antonio Brown did, and I think it's because it's connected to who he is, and I'm with you on all that front. He's not a likable character, but separate from the person, I found something quite delightful about like mid-game suddenly player X ripping off garments and clothing and dancing around the visiting end zone before being taken away and out of our lives. And so I have thought up a concept where this would add high stakes to fantasy football, to teams in general, to real life. It would be an auto-retire red phone. And this happens, and this is a late season thing. It would happen from week 15 through 18. Where one team a week is picked out of a lottery, and let's say it's the Tennessee Titans, then come that game in week 15, and this would happen each of the closing weeks, like around mid-third quarter, the red phone would ring, and any player over the age of 30 who is a non-quarterback is eligible to be auto-retired by the league at that point, and they will be taken care of in abundance financially. They'd almost be like the way that the Mr. Irrelevant is handled, but in a different way where it's like they won't work again. They'll be celebrated. It's not their choice to retire. But so because it's such a positive next step in their life, they must strip down, waist up, dance around the field and be taken away in a very celebratory manner. We'll never see that age 30 player up ever again. It would happen to four players a year. So it's not like going to cause a major like World War II shortage of arms. type scenario in sports, but it could be, you never know. It could be your starting cornerback who's age 30. It could be a very important player.
Who decides this?
Well, no, the red phone, it would be picked by random. The team, like we have our team wheel, and then inside of that, you'd go every eligible jersey number of a player who's over 30. You spin the wheel, and we don't find out till the red phone rings. And it's like, what if it's some lost game between two teams? One of them is the red phone team. You are wondering and watching who's going to be shotgun to the moon, basically.
I like that. I think it's insane, which is why I like it. I'm trying to think about, how do you do it? Remember, Late Night at the Apollo? It used to come on after Saturday Night Live, and venerable show that's been going on forever in New York City. I think if you're really bad and the crowd turns on you, I can't remember who it is. Is it a clown or
they pull you out with a cane?
But then a guy comes out and dances and kind of shoos the guy off stage or the woman off stage.
Right.
What if we have something similar to that, a little nod to Late Night at the Apollo, and have someone come out of the tunnel, and the crowd sees the guy come out, and they're going mad because they're like, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? Maybe they're shrieks of
Maybe it
horror.
Could be Antonio Brown.
Maybe it could be. Absolutely. I mean,
we're workshopping this, you know?
We're workshopping it. And he comes out, and he dances out, and he finds somebody, and then kind of escorts them down the tunnel and out of football forever. I mean, I think there's some entertainment value there. I think it's a horrifying thought for someone who's put their entire life into the sport, and it's their way of providing for their family, that their career would end in such a public, humiliating, sudden way. But at the same time, like, Mark, a good idea is a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, we would be giving that player benefits and money to match whatever they were making at that point. I do have a second one real fast. And it's got a
Squid Game element to it, though, where just everyone's showing up to work wondering if their career will be killed that afternoon.
But Greg, you seem like someone that would be the most on board with something this draconian of anyone I know. So we need your ideas on this front.
That says a lot about how you feel about me.
Well, no. I think that you're a businessman. Well, I'm not saying that. But my number two, and I mean this sincerely, like on our last show. Like, and this happens to me too often, or it happens periodically. If there was a director's cut of that show, it would have included me having like a Casey Kasem like meltdown at one point, aimed primarily at Dan. It was totally ridiculous. And my goal for 2022 is to try to get past a lot of the nonsense that has happened externally and internally, and try to just be a little bit quieter of a storm and a little bit less of a nutbag at times, and to keep a lid on it. And so I apologize to Dan, but also to the rest of us, because I think it threw us off our game for a bit. I also was like super foggy headed and a mess, and I just should maybe get my act together a little bit better sometimes. So I'm just saying that for real to you. Well, I will.
Well, it's been a long season. We're all sick. Not Greg, but we're all just grinding through it. So happy that we're all together, you know?
All right.
Howard Sandman,
a gentler, quiet storm. I don't know if I'd look forward to that. Maybe a little.
Well,
For your own sake, I would.
At junctures.
Did I say Late Night at the Apollo, by the way? It's Showtime at the Apollo. His name was Howard Sandman Sims, a legend at the Apollo Theater, chasing the bad acts off the stage after crowds booed their performance. He did his Apollo routine for 17 years. He got the nickname Sandman for tap dancing on sand in his performances. I don't know if he's still with us. I have to look into that. Maybe we could get Sandman himself.
Why not? I mean, that show was had a super unhinged feel. It was the first experience I had as a child watching like a stage act that seemed to have no... I mean, it could have gone in any one of 42 directions after Friday Night Videos.
We lost Sandman in 2003. Rest in peace, Sandman. So we need somebody else. But I think this is something. I don't know. Do we have to go to the league with this? I don't know. What?
I would imagine we'd have to go to the league.
The NFLPA will have to be involved. You'll have to trade him something. Get rid of a preseason game or something. I don't think they'll be too big of a fan of, eliminating four of their careers every year.
we maybe have to add a roster spot or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. All right, there you go. Erica, did you have anything you wanted to add?
You kind of said it. I think looking into the, 2022, we were kind of texting the other night about some of our like fun, wacky video shoots and fun stuff we used to do. And as much as I, love the season, it is feeling pretty routine, I think, for all of us. And mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to the off season when we can all sort of be together, hopefully more often, and sort of flow those creative juices.
Okay.
I'm excited for.
I like that. You should,
as
you know
do
what?
I.
To that point, why don't you put up one of our old videos that we did?
Yeah, I should.
I like when we went into Deion Sanders' personal green room. And
that was great. Destroyed it. Was never allowed back.
Right, and then the next day they had that door locked forever. That was good. That was a good one.
Yeah. Can you put that one up? I slapped Wes in the face.
Well, where are you now,
really
Deion?
Hard.
Oh, wait, you're like one of the most successful college coaches right now.
He's definitely getting a lot of pub. Is that team doing well?
Yes.
Yeah, they were.
I know he's recruiting incredibly well.
Incredible recruiting as well.
They had like the best season, and they won their league and bowl game.
There's something about Deion. Never spoke to the man. Worked with him technically for 10 years. Never saw him. Saw him at one talent summit. Never saw him at the office.
He shouted my name during that talent summit when we were up at doing some sort of group exercise. And I had to write something on a dry erase board. And man, he got my name wrong. It was my last name, but it was like I knew what he was trying to do, and it kind of felt a connection.
Wow, he said, what was it, like Sarsler or something?
Well, it sounds like we've got Mark Sessler on the jersey. Go, let's go, Sessler!
It's come just on,
like
Sessler!
I mean, it's like he, but I was like, this Sessler. Guy, he sees me, he recognizes me. I think he sees something in me. He's obviously a good recruiter.
That was also the same talent summit where, I saw him on TV a couple of days earlier, and he had a completely shaved dome, and then he showed up at the talent summit and he had like Julius Erving's hair on the Nets in 1976. And I was like, wow, the hair, it really came in pretty full there.
Very dense.
Right, and then money's a good thing. All right. He said it, his
More
album.
Money for all of us in 2022. How about that?
That's good. Too. I like that. Dude, my sister, Shay, actually owned Deion Sanders' cassette single. It was about money. I can't remember what the song was. But it was about money and how awesome it was. And so it got a lot of play in the house, as I recall. Must Be the Money, it was called. It was a banger. In fact, Ricky, let's play out the show with Must Be the Money, all right?
Sure.
Because there's a lot of young people that don't know that Deion, in his heyday, went for it as a recording artist.
Very versatile.
And released the single Must Be the Money. So there you go.
Friends with MC Hammer, no doubt.
I believe he was, actually. All right, let's go. Let's end the show. Good stuff. We'll be back on Thursday.
Let's stay on forever. The show,
this video is amazing.
They
I'm
can't,
watching it right
I'm
now.
They
telling
can't,
you.
They can't cancel us if we just stay recording forever.
There was a time where Deion ruled the world. We'll be back on Thursday with a preview of Week 18. We've never done a Week 18 preview. It happens in 2 days, so make sure you're there for that. And until then, heed the call. Hit it, Deion.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.